Welcome to the Story Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. This week we hear White Lies, Stories of Polite Fiction, from our September 2010 show. Both of today's stories center on half-truths told in transit. Featured storyteller Katie Gilbert goes first. Katie's with Stories of Our City, a Boise and Beirut-based worldwide storytelling peace project. They podcast too. Listen in at storiesofourcity.com. Here, Katie recounts a series of borderline lies told en route from Amman, Jordan to Damascus, Syria.
So, like most Americans who visit the Syrian border without visas, we had been waiting. We had been waiting for 10 hours. There were four of us. One of them was a Canadian. I don't know why she was waiting with us. She's a really good friend. And the rest of us had been waiting to get a visa. We'd been told that it was coming, that it was here, that it was never coming. And finally, we just went into the office and we said, listen, we got to go back to Amman or we got to go into Damascus. Like, are we going to get our visas or not? So after a long, complicated mess of a story that's way too even complicated to talk about here, we eventually got three visas. So I had a visa, my other American friend had a visa, and the Canadian had a visa. But one of the girls that was with us wasn't going to be able to go to Damascus. So we had a decision. We'd been waiting for 10 hours. If we went back to Amman and we started again the next day, we would still have to wait another 10 hours the next day. So we kind of sweet-talked her and convinced her that she should go back to Amman and stay and let us go on to Damascus. So the way we worked this out was she was going to get to keep the taxi driver. He had been waiting with us. We knew he was a good guy. And so we were like, listen, we're going to go across the border, and he says that he's got a friend that's waiting for us right on the other side of the border. So what we're going to do is we're going to ride with him. He'll drop us off at his friend's. We'll get in the car with his friend, and then we'll send the taxi back for you, and then he can take you back to Amman. She was like, all right, that sounds like a good plan. You guys go have a good weekend. You know, so this is the plan. We buy our visas, complications again, and eventually our friend is waiting with the Syrian guard saying, you have 5 minutes. We're like, okay, we'll have the taxi back in 5 minutes. We will go. We're going to get in the friend's 5 minutes, we promise. So we hop in the car. And we're like, okay, we got to get across this border. So we go across the border, and the taxi driver drives for about a minute. And we hear him on the phone, and we know that he's talking to his friend, and he says, yeah, I'm right there at the door to the hotel. And we look to the right, and we go, there's this building, but it's, like, completely empty, and there's nothing there. And we go, oh, I guess that's the hotel. And there's no car in sight. I mean, it's an hour and a half to 2.5 hours from where we're sitting into the city of Damascus, and there's nothing but desert from this point on. And pitch black at night, and we go, there's no friend sitting at this hotel. There's nothing out here. So he slams the car in reverse, backs it up on the highway. We're like, what is going on? And the Syrian guards start screaming at us, like, what are you doing? You can't come across the border backwards. You know, and we're kind of going, oh, my word, we've been here for 10 hours. How could this day get any more confusing? So he parks, and we're like, okay, we're waiting for friend. He gets out of the car. So we're like, okay. He said, I'm going to get my friend. We're like, all right. So we wait, and we're thinking, 5 minutes, we said 5 minutes, she's got a Syrian guard by her, we need to get this taxi back. And she starts texting us, where are you? And we're like, ah. So we notice that all these cars keep pulling over. And like, at first it's a semi, and the guy gets out and he comes and looks at us, and then he gets back in the semi. And then the next one's an SUV, and like 10 guys come piling out of this SUV. And they come look at us, and then they go get back in the SUV. And we're kind of going, what's going on? Like, what's happening? So then this Cadillac, I mean a hoopty Cadillac, like, I don't know, it was old. It comes pulling out in front of us, and the taxi driver knocks on the window, and he says, this is my friend. He's going to take you to Damascus. And we're like, score. We got to get the taxi back. We jump out. We grab our bags out of the back, and we're like, okay, how much do we pay your friend? He's like, oh, it's free. We're like, all right, free. No worries. So the trunk's open, we move some bags over, some duty-free bags over, we throw our bags in the back, and they go, okay, get in the back of the car. And I mean, this Cadillac is so old that the seats don't really sit up by themselves anymore. So like we have to push them up and squish our knees behind them, and then they just flop back into our laps. And we're like, ooh, this is gonna be a fun 2-hour ride to Damascus. And then we start driving, and the cigarettes light up immediately. And we're like, oh, could you roll down a window maybe? And they're like, oh, it's cold. We're like, all right, so fine. We'll just get chain smoke with closed windows all the way to Damascus. But it's free. It's free, so we're okay. So one of my friends decides, hey, we should, like, chat with the guys that we're riding with. You know, I'm thinking, we've been sitting at the border for 10 hours. Just get me to Damascus. She's like, we should have a conversation. So she's like, so how do you know our taxi driver? And I'm like, that's what you want to like ask them? And so they're like, what taxi driver? I'm like, oh crap, you gotta be kidding me. So now we are officially confirmed we have accidentally hitchhiked with two random guys in the middle of the Syrian desert. I'm like, thanks. Now we have this confirmed. Like, if we had any doubts, now we know. So I'm like, all right, this is gonna be a fun 2-hour ride. So we start going, and I see the passenger open up the glove box. And I, from where I'm sitting, immediately behind the driver, with my legs like pushed out so I don't knee him in the back, I can see exactly what's in the glove compartment, and I think, this is going to be fun. So I look inside, and I see that there's a cutting board, and a knife, and about 4 lemons, 2 glass tumblers, and a thing of salt. And I think, not good. Shouldn't be in the glove compartment. Shouldn't be open, for sure, because we're driving. And so he starts to cut a lemon and, like, you know, swirls it around the top of the glass and puts salt on the top of the glass and, you know, squeezes it in the bottom and reaches down to his feet and opens up the bottle of whiskey and pours in at least 2 shots. And I'm thinking, okay, this is the Middle East. So I know he has to offer us one, right? So he's going to offer us one. Then we're going to be good, because he's going to offer us one, and we're going to say no, and then he's going to drink one. Because I was like, you guys want a drink? And they were like, no, we just want to go back. Like, tell them to put it away. Tell them we don't drink or something. I was like, all right. And I was the designated Arabic speaker for some reason. So I was like, all right. So he fixes his drink. He pours his whiskey. Then he gets another bottle of beer and adds beer to the whiskey for some good reason. And I'm like, okay, I guess this is how they drink in Syria. So, and so he's like, so you guys want one? And I'm like, oh no, you know, we don't drink. And he's like, okay. So he hands it to the driver. And I was like, plan's not working, guys. That did not go well. So then he makes himself a drink, and I'm thinking, okay, so we got 2 hours at best, and it's gonna be a long drive to Damascus. So they keep drinking, and then we, like, pull over. And remember, there's nothing but desert. So the fear immediately, like, starts ratcheting up, because why are we pulling over in the middle of the desert? And we don't know these guys. This is not going to be good. So we hear the passenger door, and guy gets out, and we hear some clinking. And then he gets back in, and he was just getting refills from the trunk because they'd run out of beer. I was like, oh, that's a great feeling to know that there's refills in the trunk in case we run out. So a few minutes goes by, and all of a sudden the driver's like, shh, shh. And we're like, what? What's going on? He's like, my wife, the cell phone's ringing. I'm like, okay, you know, talk to the wife, since, I mean, we're in the back seat of the car. You haven't done anything wrong that we know of. Except for drinking, you know, while you're driving. And he's like, I'm at the club. Like, what kind of club are you at? Like, you're in the middle of the desert. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm with my buddies. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, wait, oh, yeah, yeah, we're going to drive home. Oh, wait, there's a cop. I got to go. And I'm like, what in the world? And so he's basically, like, you know, trying to pretend that he's, you know, driving home from a club or something and worried about the cops catching him on the cell phone in the car while he's drinking and doesn't care if the cops catch him. So there's no cops. There's no cars. There's no nothing. So we're kind of stuck with this guy. So we keep driving. We see the city lights. And he's like, okay, I'm going to freshen up. And so he opens the glove compartment. Again, it's like this magical glove compartment full of everything. And gets out. He has, like, maybe an inch of hair, and he gets out a brush and starts brushing his hair furiously, like, and I'm right behind him. So I'm like, oh, thanks, you know? And then he gets the perfume and squirts at least 6 squirts. Again, I'm right behind him. And so I'm like, thanks for the free perfume. That was great. You know, and thankfully he opens the window a little bit. So the smoke goes flushing out and the perfume goes out a little bit. And, you know, and then he's like, he puts it all back in there. But in the transition of getting the comb and the brush and the perfume, he knocked over the salt. This was not acceptable for passenger. Like, the guy in the front is flipping out. Like, how are we going to drink? We have at least 20 more minutes. We don't have any salt. And I'm like, really? That's what we're going to discuss for the next 20 minutes is how we drink without the salt in the car. So they go through this big, long fight, and finally the guy decides, listen, I can just pinch it off the bottom of the glove compartment and stick it in the drink. I'm like, you guys are insane. So they keep drinking like this, pinching the salt, putting it around the lip of the glass. And I'm just like, oh my, we've certainly got some really nice, you know, a nice ride here. Well, we get close. We're really close. We're about 5 minutes away. And the guy's like, all right, so, you know, you guys can stay with us tonight. And, you know, we're thinking, no. And we'd made hotel arrangements, but because we'd been waiting at the border, we were pretty sure that they were no longer existing, because you have to confirm with them, and we hadn't been able to confirm with them because our phones wouldn't work except to text. And so we really didn't have plans, very firm plans. And so, you know, I'm like, and then I'm like, well, wait a second, you know, hey, a white lie got me into this mess. I'm like, oh, no, we got plans, everything's taken care of, the hotel, we've already paid for it, so, you know, we just need a car. Like, if you just get us to a taxi, we'd be good. And they were like, no, you can stay with us, like, please. And I'm like, really, we're in a hurry, even though we've been at the border for 10 hours, we're in a hurry, and we just need to get to our hotel. And they were like, all right. And so, first exit into the city, and they pull off and flag down a taxi for us, and we quickly throw our bags into the taxi and we say, thank you so much for driving us to Damascus. And off we go. So you never know. White lies might get you into trouble, but they can just as quickly get you out.
No lies. Stories have real power. And you, yes, you, have powerful stories. So experience the exhilaration of sharing a real-life moment on stage. Please become a featured storyteller for Story Story Night and email your story on an upcoming theme to storystorynight@live.com. Of course, if the story mood strikes at a monthly event, you can enter in our Story Slam then and there. Bobby Dracos put his name in the hat for White Lies in September, and he won the slam and the night with this jaw-dropping tale about planes, lies, and automobiles in the days following 9/11.
Hi, I'm from New York City. I've come out to, thank you. You're the Bronx. I've come out to Boise many times before, quite a few years now. I have a friend and colleague out here, Roger, who I do programming with. I program for the taxi limousine industry in New York City. We do some kind of a complicated, funky software. And I come out here to consult with him, and he helps me with a lot of stuff. And back in 2001, I was making a trip out here. And I, you know, got my luggage ready, went downstairs, and have a neighbor who, you know, you see neighbors, you don't know their names, but, you know, you kind of see them, you recognize them, you wave high in the streets. And he was getting into a cab, and I, you know, walked over to him, and I said, are you a cab driver? He says, yeah, man, I drive this cab. I said, are you on duty? It's a cabbie term. Are you on duty? Can you take me to the airport? Yeah, man, sure, get in the cab. I'll take you. So again, in the cab, you know, you exchange pleasantries, find out his name is Ahmed. He was born here. His family moved to India when he was very young, someplace I don't remember. Came back when he was older to complete his education. Told me that he had 2 jobs. And he was putting his brother, the younger brother, who was the star of the family, and he was going to Harvard. So, and you know, I hear stories like this all the time working in the taxi limousine industry. Cab drivers, 2 jobs, 3 jobs, 20-hour days. I mean, they're hardworking people. Get out to Boise, everything is fine, arrived on a Sunday. Tuesday morning, 2001, I wake up, TV's on, I usually fall asleep with the TV, and there on the screen, Good Morning America is showing the World Trade Tower, the first one, on fire, saying that a plane had flown into the tower. 20 minutes later, the next plane flies in. It's chaos, call my wife, she's upset, she's pregnant with my second child. don't worry, you know, I'll grab a plane, we'll come home. There was no way to get a plane. There was no way to get a bus, a taxi, a train. Nothing was moving. The country shut down. I'm sure you all know about it. So for the next few days now, I'm staying at Roger's house because my hotel is up. He says, listen, forget about the hotel. You just come stay with me. I'm calling because back then, cell phones weren't so complicated that you can use the browser. And the internet sites weren't working. The airline internet sites were down. So calling my wife because I didn't want to use Roger's phone. And I said, honey, you got to call. You got to get me a ticket. Each time she got me a ticket, the plane was canceled. The flight was canceled. I was supposed to leave Thursday. I didn't wind up leaving to Saturday morning. Saturday morning, they say, 2 hours before, you got to be at the airport. Boise Airport in 2001. 6 o'clock in the morning, be there at 4. Boise Airport in 2001 is not open at 4 o'clock in the morning. We're online. The janitor walks in.
Opens the door.
We file in. We wait online because the people are not there yet to take our tickets. I'll keep it moving. I finally get my ticket. I go to the plane. This is how it works out. I have to take the flight from Boise. This is no joke. I take the flight from Boise to Denver to Tulsa to Oklahoma to Dulles to New York. That's my day. I'm scraggly. I've got a tan. I don't look like an American. I make each flight running through the airport, through each flight. Okay, I get through Tulsa, Oklahoma. I forgot Atlanta. That's where I wound up, Atlanta. Atlanta Airport, if you've ever been, it's huge. It's four streams. I start at A. I'm waiting. There's nobody arriving for the flight. I get up. I ask someone, this flight? No. It's canceled. You got to go to this. I go to B. I go to C. I finally wind up at D. I'm at D. There are people moving in there. I said, okay, I'm good. This flight will take off. I get on the plane. I've been through this now. They're walking back and forth with these papers, printouts, counting heads, doing everything. I fall asleep. I'm dead. I fall asleep with the scraggly beard and this and that. I'm like this. All of a sudden, I feel someone touch my arm. I wake up. Big gentleman like this is Mr. Dracos. Uh-huh. He says, would you mind at this time disembarking the plane? In my stupor, I'm waking up, oh, my tickets, because now I have a stack of tickets like this, because when they cancel things, they don't get rid of the tickets, you just staple them together. So I said, no, my tickets. Like steel. He says, yes, I understand, but do you mind at this time disembarking the plane? I look up, no joke, two federal marshals with the red jackets, man and a woman. The woman reaches up, pulls out handcuffs. The other marshal puts his hand in, pulls out his gun like this. I said, yeah, sure, no problem. Get up, start walking. I said, oh, wait a minute, can I take my luggage? We'll take care of that for you. The marshals come over, pop up two different bay doors, and pull out my luggage. I didn't tell them which luggage I had. They were following me. They take me outside. I'm at the podium. The guy's name is Mr. Dobbs. Very nice guy, very big guy, very nice guy. And I'm there, I'm like, what? I mean, is there something wrong? I mean, how come I was pulled out of the plane? Doesn't answer me. I start giggling. I'm a grown man. I start giggling. I don't know what to do. I mean, do I look suspicious? Yes, Mr. Dracos, you do look suspicious. Two FBI agents, two federal marshals, and the head of Atlanta Airport Security, and I'm walking down the airport. You know how the din is? People are talking. I was walking. You could hear a pin drop. Everybody's, the seats, they're looking around. Ticket agents stopped doing. They're just watching me. There's the terrorist. There he goes. They take me to the Atlanta Airport Interrogation Center. They check my bags. They do this. They do that. Okay. Everything is fine. Says, Mr. Jacobs, it's okay, you can pack up. That's it? Everything is fine. Well, then why did you pick me up? He says, Mr. Dracos, he says, in these times of heightened security. And I realized I wasn't going to get an answer. This is just what they had to do. They picked certain people. They were going to follow procedure, and that was it. I missed my flight, though. I'm in a Greek band. I play in a band. I have a job the next day. I say to him, listen, I need a flight. He's checking the flight list. He says, we have this flight here, which is leaving in an hour, but it's booked. He says, I have another flight tomorrow afternoon. I said, no, I'm in a band. I got to make the job. That doesn't cut it. So I tell a white lie. Oh, no. Listen, a friend of mine is on the other plane that you said.
Really? What's his name?
Ahmed. Wait here, Mr. Dracos. He goes out, comes back, and he says to me, listen, it's fine. We have a place in first class. We'll bump you up to cover your troubles. I said, wow, thank you very much. I go now to where the thing is. Everybody's sitting there. People are mulling around. I find out the plane is not taking off because there are no stewardesses to man the plane. Why? Because they're stuck in Newark. Then all of a sudden, there's a commotion in the back in the gangway. The pilot, I find out because people are talking, everybody's saying, is complaining he wants to see the head of the airline. I won't mention the airline. He wants to see the head of the airline because he wants to leave. The pilot lives in New York. So maybe there's a chance. So I'm listening, and I hear in the back of the gangway, I don't care what you say, man. I want to take off this flight. I want to go on this flight. I don't care. I live in New York. I don't watch the kids. I'm going to go back there. Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm not going to wait around. There's a bunch of stewardesses there who apparently are not dressed as stewardesses. They were on vacation. They raised their hands and said, listen, we work for the airline. We'll do the flight for comp. Everybody starts applauding. They're going to do that. The pilot knows them. And I'm looking at the pilot. I go, Ahmed? Hey, man. How you doing, Bobby? How are you? You're a pilot? Yeah, man. I fly planes. You're a cab driver. So, no, man. That's my second job. I told you I'm putting my brother through school. Get on the flight. Flight uneventful. Flight goes to New York. It circles around the trade tower. Everybody unbuckles, looks at the trade towers on the ground. They were still burning. 3 months afterwards, the planes would still circle to make sure that everyone would see it was they were paying homage to what had happened. I land. Everything is fine. I'm happy. I'm going to make it to my job in time. As I'm walking off the plane, Ahmed is standing in the door. He goes, hey, Bobby, you going home? I go, yeah, man. He goes, wait for me at carousel number 3. I got the cab in long-term parking. I'll take you home.
Thanks for listening. Story Night is brought to you by presenting partners, the Boise State Story Initiative and the Cabin, venue partner, the Linen Building, design partner, Neighborhood All-Stars, and importantly, our broadcast partner, Boise State Public Radio, who makes this podcast possible. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Night theme song is by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for more White Lies, Stories of Polite Fiction. Learn more at storystorynight.org.